what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio. I think we're on 78. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
Go ahead.
Who should go next?
You do.
Okay, this is Ethan.
And Melissa.
Yay!
Melissa is joining us. She is our newest member, bringing the female perspective, which we need so badly.
Thank God.
Badly.
Thank you.
So
it's been 78 episodes without that, for the most part. So.
Let's see. Sad. What percentage less of a sausage fest is this now?
Oh, leave that. Oh, dude. 20% less. Yeah. There we go.
But we're as crude as ever. Yay!
Woo! There it is. All right. Well, you know, don't want to disappoint anyone. So shall we talk about what we watched this week?
Mm-hmm.
What did you see, Barry?
I saw Wild Bill, the Walter Hill Western with Jeff Bridges as Wild Bill Hickok and Ellen Barkin as Calamity Jane. Great movie. It's up there with Tombstone. It's fantastic in terms of action, in terms of the acting. It's one of the best new Westerns I've seen in a long time. Really good. I can't believe it. It's one of these movies that people haven't seen or never really caught on. Excellent film.
Cool. What else did you see, sir?
What else did I see?
I have a very short list, so don't worry if it's... Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. What did you see, Melissa?
I watched T1 before we saw Terminator Salvation.
Ah.
And I watched Death Proof again, the whole thing this time.
The extended cut?
No, just the director's cut.
That's what I meant, yeah. Not the Grindhouse cut.
Yeah. No. And then I saw the transformation scene in American Werewolf in London. Josh really wanted to show me that. That was really cool.
The transformation scene, not the whole movie?
No, you know how he does those clips. So watch that and part of Evil Dead 2. So I will be watching those in full probably sometime this week.
Josh, let her see the whole movie, man.
Yeah, those are like the two best movies of the 80s.
Seriously, yeah.
Well, I was exposed, so.
Well, did it make you want to see the whole movie, though? Okay, good.
What'd you get to Army of Darkness?
Yeah.
Such a stupid movie. Was that it?
I have seen parts of Army of Darkness, but that was before.
Just parts.
I saw Angels and Demons, but that was last week. So.
Okay. Well, and did you like it or?
It's like 4.5 out of 10. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
Do you think you'll watch parts of Lars von Trier's Antichrist?
Yes. That just looks plain awful, but.
That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, if you heard some of the things I've heard about that movie. Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
I think I should get to what I've watched next because that was a good transition for me.
Go ahead, sir.
Because I watched Trier's Dancer in the Dark this week.
Oh, wow. What'd you think?
It was an amazing movie. And, you know, I hear people all the time be like, oh, Bjork, you wore a swan dress. She wore a swan dress. Well, you know what? Who gives a shit? She's like in this movie amazing. Her music's great. You know, there's a lot more to people than what they wear. Like, let me just say that.
Yeah.
And this movie, it's pretty heartbreaking and very harrowing. And it's tough to watch, but it's so worth it. And I Lars von Trier, you know, he's a bit of a crazy guy, but he's a brilliant one at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. What else did you watch?
I watched Blow Up, Antonioni?
Antonioni, yep, you got it.
That's like a rhyming name. Sounds like a pizza. Anyway, that was good. It was pretty challenging, but all good movies should be. And I was glad I watched it. It was especially that the best part of the movie is that last scene with all the mimes. You know that scene?
Mm-hmm.
That was cool stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, classic
right
film.
Right on.
And I've just been watching a lot of Buffy, as usual.
Okay.
Very cool. Now, have you watched it before, or are you just getting caught up on everything?
I watched the show when I was, like, really young, but that was, like, 10 years ago or so. But I've been watching the whole thing now, and I'm in season 3. I watched season 1 and 2, like, on a marathon, pretty much. And I started season 3 a while ago, but I was so kind of, I wouldn't say tired, but I'd say I was Buffied out. So I took a little break, and I resumed watching season 3. And the show is awesome. It's firing on all cylinders. It's at its peak, and it's great. Good stuff.
Very cool. Right on. I think all I watched. My mic is really sounding bad right now. There we go. All I watched was Explorers, Joe Dante's flick, and I can't talk about it because we're going to be covering it in a future episode.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. Crap. But it's good.
I'm glad you liked it.
It's a fascinating film, especially when it kind of train wrecks at the end. But mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, it's a good discussion, that film.
It should be a heck of a good time, yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's kind of sad. And I watched this week's film. That was it. So let's just jump into what hit theaters this week so we can have the discussion.
All right. Well, the controversial in terms of how it's being received, McGee's Terminator Salvation, which has been getting raves and pans all over the place, a movie that is getting rave reviews from nine-year-old boys, Night at the Museum, Battle at the Smithsonian, and then the Wayans Brothers film, which needs no introduction, Dance Flick.
So we also saw Dance Flick, right?
Opening night.
Yeah. Okay.
Midnight screening. No, I haven't seen it yet.
You will be.
Yes.
I want to see it. I will see it. It looks funny.
Yeah, it's well, not. Go ahead, Ethan.
Sorry, did you mention Girlfriend? Because that opens up in Limited.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got that in Denver. Yes, yes. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Steve Soderbergh.
I've seen it, so.
What'd you think?
It's really interesting. It, you know, all the gimmicks in it, kind of obviously casting a porn star, and it's a very, very nonlinear fashion. Like they don't necessarily pay off, but it's interesting to watch. You know what I mean? Like it's definitely Soderbergh just doing these things so he can see what works and do them and make movies that make money behind them. You know, so yeah, it's worth watching.
Hmm. Did you like it as much as Bubble or as more experimental films?
I haven't seen Bubble.
Okay.
Shall we move on to The Terminator?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can talk about Terminator.
Did you see anything else that released this week?
No, I didn't see anything else, no.
Okay. Not this week. I'm the only one at this table who hasn't watched at least part of Terminator, so I'll let y'all get in on it. And what'd you think, Barry?
I'm the odd man out. I really enjoyed the film.
Barry, you're not alone. I liked it, too.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I really dug it. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, the things, and there's a lot of things in there to nitpick about. I mean, I guess start off with the flaws. The movie, there's a cute little girl that's running around, who's mute, running around with Kyle Reese during the course of the movie. And it's obvious she's there for the same reason that there's a cute little girl running around in RoboCop 3, you know, because trying to make the franchise acceptable to little kids. But, yeah, I really loved the film a lot. I thought it was tremendously exciting. I thought it was interesting. I mean, you know, granted, there's a lot of unanswered questions that you hope that the movie would answer, but I think they intended at least to answer a lot of those questions over the next couple films, which, of course, at this point may or may not happen. But, you know, I initially, Christian Bale's voice was a little much because it is just like his Batman voice, but this is a guy who's been at war for like, you know, years and years, so I think it's understandable that his voice is something of a harsh, crackly growl. I was willing to excuse it for that reason. And yeah, you know, it's not James Cameron, of course, but I thought it was really exciting. I liked that they took it in a real mythical direction as opposed to a hard science level that the other ones have. I liked that it was something different. We've had three movies now where it opens up with a flashback and then cut to nighttime, modern day, and all of a sudden, you know, lightning strikes. You get this big silver ball with this Mr. Universe naked popping up, walking into a biker bar going, I need your jacket. I think it was nice that we had something very different this time. I liked that the film was very different from the other films, and I especially loved that the film ended with complete closure. It wasn't one of those Wolverine endings where they're setting up sequels, they're setting up characters. You know, this movie had a definitive closing ending, so there's no cliffhangers, there's no cheat ending. If they never make another Terminator movie, at least they could say, well, at least the film, the series, in a way, completely ends with this entry. So I liked it.
Ethan?
Yeah, I liked it too. You know, this movie definitely, it has its flaws, but, you know, I think it has its head on its shoulders. Like, knows where it's going. It knows what to say, and I think it gets it, like, obviously, I think my big problem though with the movie is I think that John as a character is completely uninteresting and has nothing to do. Like, I think if you took his storyline in the movie, like on its own, you cut out all the other stuff, like nothing really connects to each other. It's really him standing in like a bunker, like growling and stuff. But but I think an interesting thing they could have done with this movie, with this character at least, is they maybe even have like a religious kind of parable where it's like he's like a Jesus figure where people, they have faith in him, but there's other people who don't, and you could have had those ideas clash. It's kind of in the movie, sort of, but not really fleshed out. And though, obviously, Bale doesn't really bug me that much, though. The only scene that Bale's acting bugged me in was the submarine scene. looks so much like Paul Rudd in Anchorman, like where he's like 60% of the time it works all the time. I felt like Bale sounded exactly like that, and just kind of weird. But otherwise, his performance isn't bad. He's just not given much of a character. That's the problem.
Fair enough. Melissa, I know you guys didn't stay for the whole thing, but there
I agree. Yeah, I did end up walking out about, I don't know, I would say halfway through. Maybe a little less because there was previews, and that was the best part of the movie. But,
dang.
Well, please tell us why you walked out, though, to clarify. Well,
I think 50% of the reason why we walked out was because it was much too loud. I have no idea why the theater would make a midnight showing blaringly loud when people are probably going to go to bed after they see that, and you're, when you go to bed. But, and then we were just really tired. So that was half of it. But the other half was just, I just felt like I got lost through it. I lost my enthusiasm. I felt like the introduction scene was really interesting with them turning the guy into a Terminator. And I know how it ends, and I didn't really like what happened with that. And I liked Marcus's character a lot more than I liked John Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like, you said, Ethan, he has no character. He's just the guy there. And even though he's been in all the movies, like, who is he as a person? And this film could have really explored him since, I mean, originally the film was supposed to focus on Kyle Reese.
Yeah.
But they completely changed that. And so since they changed it, I just feel like they should have made his character more important and have depth and at least show a little bit of his backstory. But they kind of didn't really do that with anyone except for Marcus. And so maybe I really do regret leaving because I wish I would have seen the end. So I'll probably go finish the rest of it just so I can see it. But I just felt like the acting was so bad. But
okay,
fair enough.
But what I did like about it, if I can continue,
please.
It's in the beginning where they show him in battle and he's running onto that helicopter and like half of the Terminators following him, like catching him. That scared the crap out of me. That really scared me, and I was like freaking out. And so I think that was a good job of the movie that it scared me. And I mean, I had just watched T1. A couple hours before, and I still get scared at the end when he's crawling through the thing and the machine and after Sarah Connor and that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I really compared it to T1. And well, the other thing I liked was that they had, what did I write down here? They had tie-ins from T1, you know, with
yes.
the tape and stuff. That was really interesting because it was like, oh, I just watched this. Oh, that's really cool. But I mean, other than that, I just feel, even though T1 is so dated in its effects, it's still, I felt like I did a better job than this.
Sure.
Cool. Were we going to chime in with Ethan?
I would say, actually, I think Sam Worthington and Anton Yelchin are both terrific in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really Worthington and Avatar. Like, I could totally Cameron season him.
Cool.
As a screen presence. And Bryce Dallas Howard, you know, she's not given a lot to do in the movie, but let's just say I could look at her all day.
Fair enough.
Well, and also what I was going to say was the plot about the frequency killing the machines was so interesting to me. It was like, wow, they finally found something that's going to get them, and they didn't go anywhere with that. And I felt like that plot was so slow through the part that I did see, and I was expecting the end to wrap that up some, and apparently it does not. So that's disappointing.
Well, I'll say this without spoiling anything for you. For me, the ending is everything I want from a Terminator movie. I mean, literally everything I want from a Terminator movie is in the end of this movie. But the thing about the frequency, I had a long, in-depth discussion with Greg from Wild 105.5 about this, because he was really annoyed, too, that they established this gun, this amazing weapon. They don't use it at the end. You know, without spoiler territory, you know, the end of the movie is a rescue mission. They have to go to Skynet to save the human hostages, and there's these Terminators everywhere. I mean, the gist of the mission is that Marcus, who is able to do a lot considering who he is, trying not to spoil everything. That, yeah. You know, the trailer does that for me.
That's true.
The idea is that he is going to pretend to be something he's not, go into the factory and plug into the system, and therefore basically infiltrate it, you know, and basically be a total ambush. If they had just used the gun on all the Terminators there, you know, just shutting the whole thing down, the whole system probably would have been on lockdown. You would have all these humans who couldn't possibly get out of there. And, you know, there's so many big dramatic moments. I mean, it dramatically wouldn't make any sense to do that because, you know, if they just, I mean, it would just be too easy, you know.
Of course. I agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know.
But at least if they could have been at the end, okay, now we're going to kill you all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot.
That's what I want to see.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot that the movie doesn't set up. I mean, they don't even, the words time travel don't even come up in this movie. And this whole series is based on the notion of time travel. So, again, it's like, you know, this is a total cop-out excuse. I assume, you know, they were planning on addressing all this stuff in the sequels. But for what the film did, I was very happy with. But
It seemed like there's a lot of missing scenes in the movie. Like, you know, the first battle scene, this actor Terry Crews, he was thinking, I doubt he was cast as a corpse. Like, I'm
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, here's another thing, Ethan. I mean, you know, I'm sure you knew this, I knew this, but I'm thinking people who haven't seen T3 in a while are going to be a little lost. I mean, Bryce Dallas Howard, she's playing the same role that Claire Danes played in T3, and I think not a lot of people got that because there was no introduction, there was no follow-through there.
So yeah. DVDs this week, sir. What have we got coming? We've got some crappy treats and some goody treats.
Let's start with the crap. Delta Burke, Meshach Taylor, and Annie Potts, the stars of Designing Women, season one.
I promise we won't have to talk about this ever again after this
Never,
week.
Never
I
again.
I promise.
Until season two comes out.
No. Yay. I'm good.
We're back. A Dinosaur Story, animated film with John Goodman and Jay Leno, the one you didn't see. John Borman's Beyond Rangoon with Patricia Arquette. Falling Down, my favorite Schumacher movie and one of Michael Douglas's best films on Blu-ray Special Edition. Land of the Lost, the complete series, not with Will Ferrell. Saturday Morning Cartoons, 60s and 70s, Volume 1. You got to get that. Oh, True yeah. Romance, my favorite Tarantino. Val Kilmer as Elvis, where else can you see that? On Blu-ray. Kill Shot, the film you didn't see with Diane Lane and Mickey Rourke. And then the film that nobody saw except for Renee Zellweger and Harry Connick Jr. because they were in it, New in Town.
All right. That was quite the going through. Amazing what happens when you have to go through something twice. Wait, that was my fault. Dang it.
Deja vu all over.
Missed some gold. All right, let's move on to news. As it is your inaugural episode, Melissa, all right. You get to kick us off.
Thank you. Wayne Allwine died this Thursday at 62. He was the voice of Mickey Mouse.
He was. And his wife was the voice of Minnie Mouse.
That's so sad.
It is. It kind of, you know, I didn't think about it being sad, widow like super Minnie. Sad until you brought that up.
Yes. Yeah. Minnie Mouse is a widow. It's terrible.
I was just thinking, hey, that's cool that the same people who were the voices for the past 30 years happened to be married too. That was just awesome.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Though that does bring up some interesting questions about role playing, but
no.
Never mind.
Oh.
Well, moving on.
No. Allow me to do my lib beef. No. All right.
And some interesting news. Robert Pattinson, at an AIDS fundraiser, kissed two girls for $20,000 each.
Now, was this like a peck kiss? Or
I'm assuming they don't get to full-on make out with him, but that's a pretty expensive kiss. So.
It'd be kind of tacky if it was like a full-on makeout kiss at like an AIDS fundraiser. I mean,
for 20 G's though. I mean, that's granted, that's pretty much legalized or it's charity prostitution. I don't know how that works out.
How old were these girls? Were they like 5-year-old girls, and their parents were like, "Sure, we'll give you a bunch of money for AIDS if you kiss our daughter."
Hmm.
Wow, that just kind of brings the whole Twilight thing back into light, doesn't it?
So he raised $40,000.
Go ahead,
yeah,
sir.
Sorry. I didn't watch the whole movie again, but was it like a rule or something that if Edward kissed a girl, he'd explode or
no,
something like that?
No, it was that. Okay. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to admit that I did read the book. I did not see the movie, but no, he can't kiss her or something because if he accidentally like bites her with his big vampire-y teeth, he would taste her blood and then he'd just like eat her, I guess, was what would happen. So, yeah, kind of ironic that you point that out.
So what I hear is after you watch the movie, you need to go to Funny or Die. I think it's College Humor that has the butt sex clip. And then watch that. Yeah. Oh, I'll have to show you that. It is hilarious. Okay, and did you have anything else besides
that's all.
Okay, gotcha. Barry, what did you have, sir?
Well, there's a review that came out from Variety about the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, one of the many rave reviews this film has gotten. They say it's one of the best Gilliam films, one of the best films he's done. They suspect it's going to be a big, fat hit. interesting part of the review. They were saying that in the opinion of the Variety film critic's opinion, he was saying that he felt that of the other three actors who play the Heath Ledger part, Johnny Depp, Jude Law, and Colin Farrell, they thought of the three, Colin Farrell did the best job also essaying the Heath Ledger role.
That's cool.
Yeah.
The best thing that I love is even seeing the ones that are a little bit negative still say all the things that make me want to see a good
yes,
film.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Ooh, yes.
But what did for showing?
Oh, no, no, we're not going there. We're not going there.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I never heard of that site. Sorry.
Oh, okay, there we go. There we go. Although we may be hosting some episodes from a certain show we used to do since they're not being hosted on another website anymore.
Just saying. Life is ironic.
Just saying. Yeah, yeah. Ethan, what have you got?
Okay, a Battleship movie is in development. Yes, Battleship the board game. A2. Hit.
I just hope that it's like starring Special Ed from Crank Anchors.
Well, what I love is that if this movie had like this Twilight Zone twist ending, did you guys ever see that episode of the Twilight Zone where there was this couple and they had like been out night drinking, right? And they were in this deserted town and they're like, oh crap, and they heard like this girl laughing and stuff, and the twist end episode that they were just like little people in like a mall stuff.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
How great would this movie be if it had like a twist ending like that where the whole time they were just like in little plastic ships and stuff, and you know, pulls out, the camera pans out,
and you got the creatures.
A little language.
Or if it was like the Star Trek episode, I bet 60 quat lose on the human, you know, things like that. Yeah.
I want Christian Bale to be the lead because you know the money shot in the trailer is going to be him with his Batman growl going, "You sunk my battleship.
No. We are all dead." Yeah.
Well, since you're so unprofessional.
Okay, you made you.
We are done professionally, you and me.
Since you did.
Sorry.
He's playing against Bruce. That's what it is. Yes. Since you did one thing that makes no sense, I'll do the other one. Because, you know, because Battleship makes too much sense to make a movie out of. Apparently we're getting a movie based on the life of Bazooka Joe. From Bazooka Bubblegum, you know, the little crappy comic that tells some joke that kids are supposed to like.
Based on the life? Like, as in a Bazooka Joe?
Like I don't know. Like, I don't know where you can go with this. Because all you know of Bazooka Joe is the really crappy jokes that they put in the Bazooka Bubblegum. Like, I don't know if they're... Like, if he's, like, telling crappy jokes and at the end of the movie he gets beaten down to death by a mob, I'm okay with it.
Who would have thought this would be a character?
It could be, like, the Aristocrats.
Oh, no. People telling different Bazooka Joe stories. Okay, go ahead.
This is desperation. I mean, there's just no original ideas. I mean, sooner or later we're going to have Doritos, the movie, about a seriously, it's going to be about a bag of Doritos. I mean, like, there's no ideas left.
Starring Ali Larder.
I'd see that.
Starring Ali Larder, yeah. And they'll have a tie-in. Doritos the movie will be sponsored by Doritos and Coca-Cola, yeah.
And Robert Pattinson, hobo.
For AIDS research. Okay. Ethan, what you got next?
The Sherlock Holmes trailer came out this week, showing lots of slow-mo, bare-chested Robert Downey Jr. and Rachel McAdams looking very sexually attractive. What did you guys...
Just to verify, that's sexually attractive. Yes. Oh, he didn't say like sexy or sexy. He's like, no, she is sexually attractive.
It's supposed to intellectually attractive.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. You know, I'm hoping that they... I understand there's a lot of action because you have to pimp the fact that there's action in this movie. They've got to keep him smart, though, I hope. That's all that I'm hoping for. Mm-hmm. This looks like it's going more towards the Basil Rathbone version of Holmes as opposed to like the Jeremy Brett version.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, it's a lot less special effects than young Sherlock Holmes.
That's true. So. Yeah, since we're going the Holmes route, I picked up The Great Mouse Detective yesterday.
Wonderful. I love that movie. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm hoping it's good. It looks fun.
Yeah, it looks funny and action-packed, which is probably the two things I did not expect from a Sherlock Holmes movie. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, getting back to your Dr. Parnassus thing, I will just piggyback off that real quick, that there has been a 1-minute clip that's been put up. It has French subtitles, but it sounds like it's an expanded clip on what you saw.
Yes.
About Heath Ledger kind of trying to talk people, being a carny, talking about the Imaginarium, and it looks just... That minute clip hooked me.
Yeah, the only difference between what I saw and what you showed me was that there was so much more introduction to what we had here. When I saw it, it was just, it was him getting into the nature of dreams, and yeah, that was it.
Yeah, it was so, really cool.
Yeah, it looks terrific.
Did anybody have, like, any cut, wait, company bought it yet, or studio, or what, like,
I don't know who's putting this out.
Isn't that the big issue?
Yeah, I don't think... I think it's probably in a bidding war at this point.
My guess is going to be Fox Searchlight.
Or, well, you know, it could also be the Weinstein Company. They put out...
Brothers Grimm.
Brothers Grimm, yep.
Yeah. Wow. You sure you want to go to them after Brothers
Grimm? 20th Century Fox.
No, Searchlight. Please let it be Searchlight. Searchlight at least has the credit of The Wrestler and Slumdog just from last year alone. Yeah. Fox proper has...
But after Avatar, you know.
Max Payne.
Well, that's true. Avatar. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. That's like their one hope for the year. Right.
It's starting to look that way, isn't it?
It is. It is. Ethan, what you got? What else you got, sir?
Since you just mentioned Avatar, I guess this can be a segue, but
yay.
For James Cameron's Avatar, we'll be attached to Bayformers de Revenge of the Fallen. So,
Transformers?
Barry, you have to see it.
Has that been confirmed?
Yeah, Barry, you have to see it now.
I will. You know what? Two of my favorite graduating students from my class, I sort of promised them I'd go see Transformers 2 with them.
Well, hopefully it's like what they did with Transformers 1 where they showed the Cloverfield trailer during the preview screenings so that maybe you only have to see it once. But you'll have to see it twice with your students.
That would be nice. You know, that was a weird thing about Dark Knight, because I got to see the Watchmen trailer with Dark Knight at like a few weeks before the movie came out, and that was like all I could think about was the Watchmen trailer for, you know, you remember how I was like drooling for like yes. weeks after that.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Let's see, where shall I go next? Shall we talk about IMAX and how they just need to, you know, at some point you need to quit digging the hole and just jump in. There's been the story gone out that they're essentially saying that 92% of the people who go to IMAX movies can't tell the difference between their smaller IMAX screens and their 70-foot tall IMAX 92%? Screens.
92%? Where do they get this number?
I don't know, but
you really weren't in an IMAX theater tonight? I guess they're just retrofitting already, like, just regular theaters and removing a few rows of seats and putting the screen up bigger and covering, like, all the curtains behind it.
Yeah, and what here's the annoying thing of it all. Is that the reason why people aren't whining more about this is because it's a clearer projection. I shouldn't have to pay $5 to get it, $5 more just to get a clear projection of the movie I'm going to see.
Mm-hmm. It should be clear, not blurry. Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, I'm... Stupid IMAX. And I grew up going to the USC IMAX in LA. I mean, I know what a real IMAX screen is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why I quit going to the IMAX here. I mean, I saw Watchmen on IMAX because I got my tickets for like $8 a piece. So, you know, it was the same price no matter what. Why the heck not?
But Up's going to be an IMAX 3D.
What is?
Up.
I can't talk about it. I'm sorry.
That's right. I almost slipped something big there.
Nothing.
It's going to be hard to see a movie that far out and not being able to talk about it.
Actually, I don't think it's an IMAX. I think it's just in 3D.
Really?
Digital 3D.
I swear I thought it was because I was really looking forward to that. But.
Well, if it's well done in 3D.
Terrence Malick's new movie is going to be in IMAX, so.
See, that could be worth it for the expanded aspect ratio, but still, no, never mind, because I'm good.
Yeah, not everything needs to be in IMAX, but yeah, well, if it's like Terrence Malick, then yeah, you definitely want to see whatever that guy comes
up with.
If
I can see it on a real IMAX screen, whole other issue. Good. All right, Ethan, back to you, sir.
I might as well mention the story, which is hot off the presses. Michael Haneke, the author behind film See Games Cashy, is this film, The White Ribbon, has won the Palme d'Or at this year's film festival. It is a story detailing how basically fascism can happen in children too. So,
sounds like something I want to take grandma to.
Well, it's Haneke. I mean, this is the Funny Games guy, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely does not go easy. You know, he's like Lars von Trier. I mean, for him, a movie is like a gun. He just, you know, and he opens fire on his audience, and it depends on, you know, how many people he can get hit as you watch one of his movies. So, yeah.
Yep. Well, to keep with the Cannes Film Festival, kind of keep the similar theme, did you guys see the Inglourious Basterds clips this week?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they are so good. Actually, two of the clips are kind of eh. But there's this the one where Brad Pitt's interrogating the German guy. Did you like that one, Ethan?
Oh yeah, Eli Roth.
Well, he didn't come out.
Baseball bat.
Yeah, well, he's getting ready to. Yeah, yeah. If you watch that scene and then you watch the trailer, you know exactly who Eli Roth is about to hit with the baseball bat. But just the whole part where at the end, Brad Pitt essentially says, you know, hey, so-and-so, got a German out here who wants to die for country. Oblige him! I'm stuck with that in my head forever. It's awesome. I cannot wait for this movie.
It's so far out, though.
That's true. It's August, yeah.
Well, it's end of the summer. It's not like Avatar. I mean, that's like 6 months away. Mm-hmm.
Very true. Very true. Back to you, Ethan.
Not sure which one to do. Okay, I'll just do Spielberg. He's going to be a biopic of Martin Luther King Jr. I'm kind of interested. And like, there hasn't been one yet.
Yeah. Are
you saying that?
Yeah, no, that's so true. It's astonishing that there's never been a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. movie.
Is it more surprising that Spielberg's doing it?
Well, he was the one brave enough to take on The Color Purple and Amistad, so, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true, because I was like,
I really hope...
You really hope...
Sorry, I just really hope in the movie where, like, I don't know, like, there's an advisor to think saying, I hope that one day we can have change. And Martin Luther King can be like, yes, we can.
Oh.
I thought you were going to say you're afraid that he's going to have extraterrestrials at the end of the film.
They're going to pull a man who wasn't there.
Oh, I meant Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh.
Like, yeah. It's going to end where he goes into a crypt and it turns out it's all these little alien skeletons. That would be very historically inaccurate.
Adventures of Martin Luther King here.
As long as, you know, we don't get like Mario Van Peebles doing it, I guess I'm okay with it. I'm just after Solo, I lost all respect for the guy. Just saying.
After Highlander 3, I lost all respect for the guy.
Well, there's that too. There's just so much to choose from. There really is. Let's see. What shall I do next? Fanboys 2. There's an idea out there. There's no way this movie's ever going to get made. I just don't think so. It didn't make anything at the box office. It hasn't been doing that great on DVD. But apparently,
didn't it just come out though on DVD?
About a month ago.
Really? Oh. I just saw it in new releases at Best Buy, so.
It's been out for at least a couple of weeks.
You think maybe if enough people will buy it, it'll maybe get like a Darko following and maybe they'll do a straight-to-video sequel?
Well, let me tell you what the story is and then you can tell me what you think.
Okay.
The story is that the geeks get together and decide to go to Australia to crash the set of Attack of the Clones.
Oh, because of the response to Phantom Menace?
Yeah.
That's an amusing idea.
Yeah, but can you see them getting the budget to do it?
Oh, no. They shoot it in Canada.
Well, no. Okay. Will another one of them be dying?
Yeah. Who dies next? That's the question. Yeah.
That's exactly. A good point.
Maybe it'll be Seth Rogen's character. And they have to do something for him. I don't know why they would ever do something for him, but either of him, I don't.
Either one?
Yeah. It's worth mentioning. And I'm done. All right, with that story. Back to, Ethan, your turn.
Okay, final one here. After, I believe it's like an 18-year absence, Alejandro Jodorowsky is having a new film. It's been green-lighted. It's the financing's there. And star as in a buddy, I think buddy cop role, I'm not sure, both Nick Nolte and Marilyn Manson.
Together at last.
Ah.
Yeah.
Are we getting The Lost Highway again? Or?
Well, this is Jodorowsky. This is the guy who did El Topo and Holy Mountain. Interesting. I know for years, Jodorowsky tried to get The Son of El Topo off the ground, starring Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson was married when he was married. I think he married Dita Von Teese, I think. Jodorowsky was the preacher.
Wow.
Yeah, he married them. Yeah, he's like a pagan wedding administrator. Anyway.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
But seriously, I love Nick Nolte. I just want to do a show dedicated to him. I love that guy.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Let's see. I've got two things left, and you're done, right, Ethan?
Yeah.
Actually, no, I've got three things. How did I miss talking about the Surrogates trailer? That looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, it could go either way, because like it looks like it could be Total Recall, but it could also be The Sixth Day.
Yeah.
It looks like it could be that, too, so we'll see.
Fair enough. Katie Sackhoff has been spotted at Golden Apple Comics in L.A., stocking up on Typhoid Mary comics to study up on the character. The theory is that she did figure somewhat, either that the Daredevil reboot is moving along further than we expected, or there's a possibility Typhoid Mary did figure into the Deadpool storyline somewhat, too.
Or she's just a really big comic book geek who loves Typhoid Mary comic books.
You know, knowing how much she's working to get something lined up, I wouldn't be surprised to, yeah. We'll see if we can get something official from her. Since we did the interview, we'll see if we can reach back out and get some confirmation. So I guess that is about all we've got for news. So we are going to take a quick break, and then we shall be back.
Hey, Tom, great game.
Yeah, Phil, that was a close one.
Are you okay, man? You seem a little distant today.
I'm fine.
Really?
It's nothing. Just some guys at work.
What's up?
I just feel out of my depth sometimes. They have all these deep discussions about the meaning of life, destiny, philosophy, and all I can offer is the last movie I saw.
Hey, man, you know what? I used to be just like you.
You? No way.
Yes way, Phil. For years, I felt inadequate, shallow, and unable to join in the big conversations.
What happened?
I found movie mantras.
Movie mantras? Is that some kind of cream?
No, my friend. It's a weekly podcast by some British guy that takes quotes from films and weaves them into usable wisdom. It totally changed my life.
Sounds perfect, but I bet it's expensive.
Well, the show offers a guarantee to turn you into a deep thinker capable of achieving all of your life goals or your money back.
Fantastic.
But the best part is that it's completely free.
Oh, my God.
That's right. So go to www.moviemantras.com, and in a few weeks, you'll feel just like Yoda, only better looking.
I'll go right now. They have Wi-Fi in this gym. What was it again? www.moviemantras.com?
That's right. Movie Mantras. Shaves as close as a blade, or your money back.
And that was a new one from our good friend Martin Darkley over at Movie Mantras. This week we get to talk about the first Coen Brothers movie I ever watched. What are we talking about, sir?
Talking about Barton Fink.
One of the most surreal movies I've ever seen.
And speaking of the Cannes Film Festival, this movie, it was definitely oversold when it came out because it was the first film to ever win Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director at the Cannes Film Festival. I mean, it swept the big three. And you'd assume that this is the greatest movie ever made. And, you know, it's not. But it's one of my favorites, certainly.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It really is a glorified story about writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's John Turturro at his best. John Goodman is in his precursor as the Bible salesman in O Brother, Where Art Thou?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what really strikes me about it is what, having watched it after seeing Sullivan's Travels, you can definitely see a correlation between Sully and John Turturro's character.
Sure.
In that they want to write about trouble, but have no idea what trouble is.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ethan, what did you think of this little film?
I was blown away by this movie. It was really, really frightening, I found. Like, it felt completely like a horror movie, especially in those last, like, 20 minutes or so.
Yes. Where it just goes balls out.
It felt like a sequel to The Shining.
Yeah.
Like, I know Coens are humongous Rick fans, and they include references to his movies and, like, at least one reference in all of their movies. So, yeah, there's that. And, yeah, obviously there's that there's that part at the end are kind of be lost, I guess. But, yeah.
Yeah. What I love is the fact that it kind of takes, having seen some more of the films that I hadn't seen, because I hadn't seen Miller's Crossing, I hadn't seen Blood Simple, it finds a way to kind of give it the film noir feel and bring in that surreal, the absurd surrealism that the Coens are known for as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did it very well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of this one?
It's a brilliant film. I love the galaxy, you know, kind of like, you know, repeating ourselves with Preston Sturges. We get a galaxy of wonderful actors in this. Michael Lerner was the only actor from this film to get an Academy Award nomination. I thought John Goodman should have got him personally.
Yeah.
Michael Lerner as the studio head who wants that Barton Fink feeling. I love his performance in the movie. Steve Buscemi's great in this film.
Yes.
Judy Davis, who really broke out at this time. She, the following year, she would work for Woody Allen in Husbands and Wives and get an Oscar nomination. And the same year she did Barton Fink, where she was something of a muse for the title character. She was also a muse for William S. Burroughs and David Cronenberg's Naked Lunch, so kind of a weird year for Judy Davis playing these weird muses. But yeah, she's great in the film. I love this film. I love the way it feels and looks. A lot of critics turn against the film for its last 20 minutes because they are so nightmarish and so disturbing. I always love the image of John Goodman running down the hallway going, "I'll show you the life of the mind," and there's fire everywhere. I mean, It's insane.
But it is a horror film, like Ethan's saying, but it's also just hilarious.
It is. It's unsettling, but it is also very funny. And the whole notion with what could or could not be in the box is very darkly funny.
Yes. Yes. Oh, there's... Yeah. It's good. The sad thing is, you know, I listen to some podcasts. They talk about this stuff for like hours on end. And it's kind of like the same problem I had in high school. I can write a 3-page paper in 2 paragraphs.
It's okay. Well, I actually have a lot of things.
Well, go for it, sir. Okay. Go.
Well, let's talk about our interpretation of it. I guess the most obvious one would be that John Goodman is the devil and that the hotel is hell and the beach at the end is heaven. But I feel like there's kind of more to it than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not quite sure exactly what, but
there's something.
That's
more.
The beauty of the film, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. I've heard that interpretation a few times. That could very well be spot on. Another one is that Fink is stuck in something of a purgatory that he's aware of, and so the crazy ending is the one that he came up with in order to escape from the writer's block that he's stuck in. He is aware of his own existence, and he's essentially writing the script as we go along, so he's not even sure what's in the box. So therefore, you know, him being at the beach at the end is him escaping his writer's block in a, you know, in almost kind of a spiritual way. That's another possibility.
The kicker of it all is that the writer's block was totally and completely self-inflicted. Because for all the talk about the common man, you got a common man sitting right there offering, hey, if I got stories, can I tell you stories? Yeah, I'm sure you could. Sure you could. You know, go ahead, boy, son, you bother me. And he just wanted to do his own interpretation of it as opposed to actually following through on what he said of really making a movie for the common man or making real theater of life, whatever it was. And, you know, instead of opening his eyes to that, which he could have done very easily, and, oh, look, writer's block's done in 5 minutes. Granted, that would have made for a much less entertaining movie, but it's just very interesting to see that he never really catches on all that well.
Yeah, very rich movie. It's apparently they were trying to make a comment about how a lot of these guys were told, you know, make like a Wallace Beery type wrestling movie back in the day. And that's certainly what Barton Fink has to do. He's trying to make a cheap B-movie wrestling film. But of course, he's one of these poor writers who was given this task of having to create this inept movie, but he's so much smarter than the film he has to craft. You know, that's a nightmare for any screenwriter. You know, they go to Hollywood, they want to do like the next Woody Allen film, but no, make a write us a G.I. Joe movie, write us a battleship movie.
At the same time, this also gives you an appreciation for people like, I'll just throw John Cusack out there, who makes the really interesting and experimental movies, even edgy in some cases, even if they end up being very popular, like Gross Point Blank. That was a risk for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he does Serendipity. He does Must Love Dogs. He does those kind of movies so that he can also make way to make these other movies too.
Yeah.
Not only so that he can make money, you know, and so I'm sure he's doing just fine if he never makes another movie, but it also gives him the credibility to be able to help that filmmaker get the movie made too.
Well, speaking of that, don't you think this movie is maybe a little autobiographical for the Coens? Because I know they actually started out working on genre pictures. Like, you know, they were actually the assistant editors on The Evil Dead.
Yeah, I think they've pretty vehemently denied that it's about them, but I can't imagine it not being.
Oh, sure. I mean, this movie is almost like revenge for the experience they had on Crime Wave, the Sam Raimi film that they helped write with him and that the studio took away from them, butchered, to change the music, change the lead actor, re-edited the film, and then slapped it in theaters where nobody saw it with a terrible ad campaign. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, yeah. What else did you want to talk about, sir?
Another thing I noticed was this was shot in like full frame.
Mm-hmm.
Was it full frame or 16:9?
Well, yeah, it was 166:1, which is like, it isn't quite full frame.
Yeah, it's like 16:9 letterbox.
Pretty.
133 is full frame. So, but yeah. It's not done in like the super like CinemaScope 285 or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Ethan. It evokes the framing of those crappy B movies that he was making.
Yeah. okay. One little detail I liked is a scene where Barton, Tony Shalhoub are having lunch, and he has both like milk and whiskey at the same time, and he's like chugging one and the other. I like that. That was cool.
There's a lot of texture to this film. There's a lot to be said when you get that solid of a cast. It's kind of hard to go wrong when you're talented filmmakers like that. It's really easy to kind of let the actors do their thing, especially when you see someone like Tony Shalhoub, who's a diametrically opposed to who he is as Monk. I mean, totally different guy. And it really shows off how good of an actor he is, too. And just everyone, who played the older writer? His idol?
I can't remember.
It was the dad on Frasier. That's what I remember.
Oh, John Mahoney. Sorry. Yes. John Mahoney, excuse me.
He was great in it. Just trying to represent that he's this great guy. And they're like, oh, no, he's just a big drunk.
That's right, and John Mahoney's kind of playing Faulkner in a sense. All these figures are based on real writers around the time. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot Mahoney's playing the Faulkner figure. Yeah, and I love the Carter Burwell score to it too.
Yeah,
great music by Burwell, who also did the music to Miller's Crossing, which I thought was so beautiful and haunting.
Yeah, there's just so much to like about this movie. Like you said, it's not my favorite of theirs, but it's definitely something very unique. It's very Coen's, and it's well worth checking out.
For me, it's one of their masterpieces. What do you think, Ethan?
Yeah, I'd put it in my top three Coen films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same probably. Here. Now, here, let me ask you guys a question. At this point, are you more a fan of their surreal comedies or more a fan of their noir? Because that's really kind of how the two sections that you can put their stuff into.
Sure.
I'm not sure, actually. I obviously Big Lebowski, you know, for the win, but... I'm not sure, actually, because, yeah, I really do like their dramas, like their, you know, their Miller's Crossing and their
No Country for Old Men.
Yeah. And I guess Fargo, that has a lot of comedy in it, but
yeah,
not sure.
Barry, what do you think?
I think I prefer their comedies or the more experimental dramas like Barton Fink. I like, you know, Fargo and Blood Simple and No Country for Old Men, but I like it when they go even farther out there. I like stuff like Barton Fink and Hudsucker Proxy, stuff that just, you almost can't categorize it.
Yeah. Now, Melissa, you've been quite quiet because we kind of got dead set at the last second.
I have not seen this.
That's okay. Have you seen many Coen Brothers films at all?
I've seen Fargo, and I've seen The Big Lebowski kind of as background noise. I haven't really paid attention to that yet.
Okay.
So, and probably other things. Sounds like
you've seen No Brother Where Art Thou.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so yeah, you've seen some stuff. Cool. Mm-hmm. Right on. We're on the quest. We're always watching the movies. That's the beauty of this is like for each one of these series that we're doing, I think I haven't seen at least half the movies, which is just beautiful. It's a way to expand our horizons.
No, it's good. No, it's like with the Sturges thing. I mean, I never saw Great McGinty before. I never...
Hail the Conquering Hero.
Yeah, I never saw Hail the Conquering Hero either. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so much fun to be had. We're actually not going to be recording next week because it's my wife's birthday and we're going to be going doing fun things on our normal recording day. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Hudsucker Proxy, which is absolutely awesome and fun wrapping it up that way. And we'll announce who we're talking about next for next director series. There's a few of them out there that we might throw around and we'll just see what happens. But until then, what's hitting theaters this week, sir?
Pixar's Up, and speaking of Sam Raimi, Drag Me to Hell with Alison Lohman and Justin Long.
That looks just so crazy.
Interesting choice of the movies that weekend. Yeah.
Something for the whole family.
That's right.
For your happy preppy kids and your goths.
Yeah, that's right.
Why, I don't know why I just went into like demonic voice, like possessed boy sound.
Sam Raimi would have approved.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Or hardcore. Yeah, whatever. What's hitting DVD next week? I want to hear about this crap title of the week eventually.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, it's a good way to wrap up.
I'll warm my way towards it. He's Just Not That Into You. Available on regular and Blu-ray. Scarlett Johansson, Justin Long, Drew Barrymore, Jennifer Connelly.
Now, did you see this?
No, I wanted to. It did really well.
I've seen it.
And?
I've seen it. It's horrible.
Ah, it did. It made like $90 million. It was a big fat hit, but no good, Ethan.
No good. You know, it's actually a movie I hate the more I think about it.
Wow.
Fair enough.
Because I'm like Jennifer Connelly and Scarlett Johansson in the same movie.
I thought it was actually based on a book.
Yes, it is.
Too. So mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting. I always go for the book movie making things.
Mm-hmm. Did you see any of that?
No.
Or? Okay. Mm-mm. So we might be missing this one, but okay. What else you got, sir?
Defiance with Daniel Craig and Liev Schreiber, directed by Edward Zwick, the director of Last Samurai, and in addition to other great films like Glory, available on regular and Blu-ray also.
So it's the alternate universe in Glorious Bastards.
I just love that they're already starting to call in Glorious Bastards if you thought Valkyrie was too wimpy or, you know, Defiance wasn't gory enough, wait till you see this movie. So. I don't know.
It doesn't do any of those movies any justice.
I'm still kind of on the fence about how I feel about Inglourious Basterds, but I guess I'll just have to see the film. Imagine
that's
that.
That's true.
Prison Break, season 4. Is he still in the prison?
No. The series just ended. And I watched like the last 5 minutes, so I saw how it resolved. I was like, really? Okay, I don't need to watch this show.
It'd be awesome if... It'd be awesome if it was like Star Trek VI. They were put on like a Klingon planet prison. They had to escape from that.
I would have loved if it had been like all a dream and he was hallucinating and then they throw the switches, he's in the chair. That's what I was hoping for. Yeah.
Nice. Looking for like that Satan Elsewhere ending, which is like completely
so
crazy.
So was it really lame? Because I watched the first like season and a half. So
I'll tell you about it after we get off the air.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Weed, season 4, because there's nothing cooler than a pot-dealing mom. Available for the first time, Revolutionary Road with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet on regular and Blu-ray. Talk about the feel-bad movie of all time. I saw Rachel Getting Married, by the way, and I loved it. And that was dark and painful, but really moving and touching. Really? Revolutionary Road is like...
I want to see that.
Yeah, I like Rachel Getting Married a lot. Yeah, yeah. Revolutionary Road, no, no.
Not so much.
The Hunger, season 1, based on the Tony Scott film.
Isn't that another vampire TV show?
Yes, another vampire TV show.
Just checking.
But not as good as True Blood, so I've heard. A very different type of TV show, Rugrats, season 1 and 2.
Yay.
Were you a fan? This is
one of those that's
I grew up with it.
Okay.
I grew up with it.
Was it pretty funny?
I grew up with it, too.
Yeah.
I loved that show. And then they made the Rugrats
movie
generation thing where they all changed them and made them into teenagers, and that's where it lost me. But when they were kids in the original show, it was very cute.
They actually had the Rugrats grow up.
Yes. That was awful, I thought. But cute for Nickelodeon.
So now we know why they don't do that with The Simpsons.
Are the Rugrats movies any good? I never saw any of them.
I saw the first two, actually.
I'll tell you. I don't remember. Probably saw them a long time ago.
Okay.
I remember.
How are they, Ethan?
The second one has an awesome Godfather reference.
Fair enough.
Because doesn't, like, Bruce Willis is in one of them, right? Isn't he, like, in the third one, or?
I think he was, like, in the one that was, like, a crossover with another show or something. I never saw that one.
Okay.
I was too old.
See, I was more of a Muppet Babies guy. And they had so many like Star Wars and Indiana Jones and every other kind of reference in the world.
No, they referenced clips too, like whole clips.
Yeah, yeah. That there's a reason why that show's never ever gonna come to DVD.
I know. It'd be like 5 minutes if they ever put it out on DVD.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Robert Duvall in his Academy Award winning performance, Tender Mercies, where he plays a country western singer. Good film. A movie kind of like what was the one? Sorry, I'm blanking. The one, which one is it? Kind of like Killshot, another movie that has been on the shelf forever. Amy Poehler, Rachel Dratch, and Parker Posey in Spring Breakdown. This is a kind of a female variation on Old School or even that one coming out, The Hangover. Yeah, it's...
But they won't have Mike Tyson singing...
Never mind. This looks, you know, it sounded promising. It was supposed to be Amy Poehler's like breakout movie after Baby Mama, but it's on the shelf, never got released. Spring Breakdown. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm not expecting good things. One of the worst movies Stallone has ever made, Avenging Angelo, is now available on Steelbook. This is Stallone, Madeline Stowe, and in his last movie, Anthony Quinn. This was made like it was after Copland, you know, was critically acclaimed, but it didn't make that much money. So he was trying to like come back with Driven, which didn't happen. And Avenging Angelo was not even released in theaters in the U.S. It's a terrible movie. It's like a really awkward mixture of comedy and action. It's bad, but it's on Steelbook.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that's why they put it in a Steelbook, because there are so many Steelbook freaks out there. They'll be like, I have to own it. I'm not one of those people.
Good.
I have 9 Steelbook movies. I love my Steelbooks, but. Yeah, it still has to be a movie I like for me to get it.
Yeah, steel or leather, this doesn't matter what book it is, this movie stinks. Highlander, the complete animated series. Anybody watch this?
They made an animated series?
What?
Yeah, they had an animated series, and they briefly had an action figure line that spawned off of that. I think it lasted only one series. I mean, it's one disc, so it can't be the longest series. Yeah, Highlander, the complete animated series. There can only
That's
be
quality
one.
Right there.
And there only was one. Thankfully, it gets a little better. Here we go. Dragon's Lair 2, Time Warp on Blu-ray.
Don Bluth video game goodness. I hope it plays awesome. I loved this game when I was... This came out when I was in high school, I think.
Yeah, man, me too.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Also Space Ace.
Yes.
Yes.
And Dragon's Lair 1 was even fun.
That's right, man. Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. Yay.
In a legitimate DVD release. I think this has all the special features of the Amazon release, except not burned to a DVD-R. which means that the disc lasts longer. So
I'm
going to have to get this. It has like a commentary of the musical that's like another half hour, 45 minutes longer than the movie. So
nice.
I'm going to have to get this.
And does Whedon do a commentary?
I think so. I think he's part of musical, the commentary.
Oh, excellent.
Commentary of the musical. My bad.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
Back when he was hysterically funny, raunchy, edgy, on the edge, and the most popular movie star in the world, the 25th anniversary of Eddie Murphy Delirious. This is his first concert film. And
the red jumpsuit, right?
Yeah.
You can pick that up like at Walmart in the $5 bin.
Hmm. Well, the 25th anniversary edition?
I don't know. This was probably at least a few years ago that it came out.
So basically, you could either get the $5 version at Walmart, or you could like pay like $19.99 to get like one commentary by one of the key grips. And then finally, crap title of the week. This is more of the sewage title of the week. It just shows that anything will get made. This is so offensive. As a precursor, not only do we not condone this film, but the title of this film, the last part is spelled D-E-A-D, as in dead, like Dawn of the Dead. The film is called Retarded.
What?
Retarded. The tagline is, they're not so special anymore. And
is this trauma? Tell me this is trauma.
No, it's not trauma. Trauma has the taste not to do this. The poster shows a number of zombies with their hands clutched to their chest getting off of a short bus.
What?
Yeah. And this is not made by the South Park guys. This is the real deal. Yeah.
I mean, mentally
handicapped zombies.
So who is it made by?
Some jerks.
That sounds worse than Toxic Avenger 4, where they had the biker gang go into the Midvale school for the gifted.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, this is like a whole movie based on that joke.
Oh, yeah, but awful. Zombies.
Zombies. Mentally handicapped zombies.
It's going to have Ben Stiller in it, isn't it? Sorry, it's Simple Jack.
That would be an improvement. No, this is, complete sewage. Talk about like a tasteless, awful.
Wow. Okay. Is that all we've got for releases this week?
That's it.
Fair enough. All right. Wow. That just kind of really disturbs me in so many, many ways.
Not available on Steelbook, so don't buy it.
All right. Well, we do have one piece of mail for this week. It's, Valencia's just coming through for us in a big way.
Thank you, Valencia.
Something cool to like send her. Yeah. That's like cool. I'll figure something out.
Yeah, definitely.
Something spiffy. But so, this is from her. So for the past few months, I've noticed the new Terminator trailers and wasn't all that interested, even after the outburst Christian Bale had. But the Terminator theme, I realize, gets me all kinds of hyped up. I've seen the previous ones, but T1 is my favorite. Even if it was on TV right now, I'd stop everything I'm doing and watch it. And with that said, I feel like I was watching it all over again, plus and minus a few characters, from phrases to cameos, and even that last part, I felt like it was a do-over. The final action scene in the first one was definitely... felt like it was redone. I think I was expecting more John/Kyle collaboration.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be what a lot of people are thinking about it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of complaints about that. A lot of complaints about the story and believability. Although I would like to point out that I've always found it funny that these robots are so intelligent that they can bend space-time continuum. They've never bothered to go back to like the Mayflower and kill John Connor's like great-great-grandparents, which would like save them so much trouble because back then they couldn't possibly defend themselves against killer robots. Unlike the 80s and the 90s when we have like weapons can like defend ourselves against these killer machines. Why not just go back in time and like just like kidnap the people who are like complete computer geniuses? Just like kidnap Steve Jobs and somebody else from Pixar.
You had me at like Terminators versus Muskets. That's got me.
Oh, okay. There you go. Now, there you go.
Plot of T5.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually kind of a cool idea. And when Terminator has like a little coonskin cap on, like David Crockett.
Wow. All right, then. That just kind of hurt a bit. But I like it.
It's a cool idea.
Powdered wigs.
It would make fun like that movie Outlander and go like the to John Connor's great 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 like biggest ancestors and have them like Terminators versus Vikings.
Giant axes. Wow, so we have Carl Urban in Pathfinder versus the Terminators.
I just want to see the Terminator with the Viking hat on with the two sticking out. That'd be so cool.
That's actually what's going to happen in Thor.
Oh boy. So, moral of the story, these movies have always had plot holes and, we're talking about killer robots from the future. I think maybe some people are taking these movies a little too seriously, but Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Well, if you'd like to shoot us an email, by all means do. You can email us at podcastBarry, Ethan, Josh, Dave, or even Melissa at screengeeks.com. You can also send us a voicemail at 719-553-5664. And I guess that will do it for this week. Did we scare you off?
No. What did you say, Ethan, though? Me and Barry both just made weird looks at each other.
Please email me.
Okay, we didn't get your symbolic message there, but...
Okay, yeah. Polaroids, whatever.
Valencia, please send him some mail.
See, there's a gag in there that I use for other podcasts where someone asks for mail a little bit too much. No, not too much, but he likes to beg for mail. So I like to send various pictures of mail. Okay, so... No. I think one time I sent a picture of Brutus the Barber Beefcake. So yeah, until next week on That Pleasant Thought, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And Melissa.
Take it easy.